Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. As you know, in our last episode, we were covering the Supremacy Clause, and we're currently still in the midst of the North Carolina debates. These are very good debates, and I'm praying that you understand, or you're beginning at least, as we've been going through this for the past couple of weeks, several weeks, that you're beginning to understand just how precious these ratification debates are. And so, as you know, we have, you know, just this, and the bad news is we've only got this and Virginia left. And even worse news, we're almost done with North Carolina. The good news is we saved the best for last, because Virginia will open your eyes, because the plainness in how they speak about the Constitution, I mean, they boil it down. And this is probably has more to do with Madison being more concise, more succinct, and being able to just tell it like it is. And so one of the things we have to keep in mind is the fact that in going through the ratification debates, many of the states, many that actually debated the Constitution. So just to be clear, like Delaware, they didn't really question whether the convention exceeded its authority or not. They accepted this new Constitution. Wasn't even on the table. Maybe there was one or two that said, hey, you know, and those, if you look at who the one or two are those who were actually supporting the state cabal that was literally creating a vulnerability of the land of liberty to actually be able to become subjugated to another foreign force. It's that simple. And so when we've gotten into Pennsylvania and some of these Massachusetts, starts with an M, when they actually called out this question of whether the commission, you know, or whether the convention and the delegates exceeded their commission that was provided to them by the states, it came down to absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that's because when those who were representing the people of the state, not the elected cabal, those who were actually in power of the states trying to preserve their power, when it came to the people of the state, they said absolutely not. And they basically rejected the anti-federalists. And the anti-federalists were those who were trying to protect their cabal, their little fiefdom of power. So anyhow, as you know, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence, as well as the academic evidence-based solutions. Now, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And actually, I've actually had a few people call, but not because of the show, but because of the content, Reclaiming the Republic, or getting involved and so forth. But if you want to call, you're more than welcome to. If you've got a comment, hey, yes, quit reading. Or maybe your complaint is I should improve on my reading skills, or I should say reading aloud skills. I can read a lot faster. As a matter of fact, I can actually skim over stuff and actually understand it. But reading it out loud so it's precise so that you're hearing every word, it's a lot different. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening. I haven't said that in a long time. And I do kind of want to move forward. But one of the things I really want to put out here is that as we're looking at, you know, what's going on in, you know, what I'll call marketing space, as we see liberty being lost, as a matter of fact, if you want to look, I mean, most people would look at Canada as a free nation. Look at Canada today. They have become completely intolerant towards Christianity and the practice of one's religion. They do not respect the ability for people to actually have religious expression and being able to assemble and being able to share the word of God because of this flu virus that they've dubbed the coronavirus pandemic. If you look at the mortality rate from this virus, it's no worse than some of the flus that we've had. So why? They are using this and they are setting us up. And so I've had a lot of conversations over the weekend with Constitution Party leadership and others. And I am here to tell you that the focus of this show is your state legislators, getting you to focus your attention at the state level, going after your state legislators. They need to be aware. When we see, and I'm telling everybody, it is dependent upon you. When we see the federal government getting ready to throw away and discard our Constitution, everybody that understands what I am talking about needs to be at their state capitol demanding that the states step up and say, stop, federal government. You do not have the authority to discard our Constitution. We are the parties to it. You are not. We created you. And at that point, we must initiate republic review. And this is where we wipe out all of this unconstitutional debt. This is where we start gathering up every single person who has been culpable in creating this debt in violation of the Constitution and start shipping them out to China and the other countries that we owe debt to because they were the ones that created this fraudulent debt. And we're not accountable to fraud. They are under oath and they have violated the supreme law of the land. And so, if you understand what I am saying, this is huge. This is one of the reasons why I need to get organizations behind Republic Review so that even if something happened to me, even if I died tomorrow, this movement would live on so that the Constitution can survive. Period. It has to become the focus of the Constitution Party, and it has to become the focus of every single patriotic movement out there, whether you're, you know, Right to Life or Health Freedom. If you are a myopic organization and you are not uniting in saving the Constitution, you are a part of the problem. It is that simple. And as a matter of fact, as I've always said, if you're not a part of the solution, you are a part of the problem. And so one of the things that as we kind of went through this, as a matter of fact, let me get back to, you know, this North Carolina debate. We kind of started this all off with, and I believe, yes, it was Mr. Iredell, and he started talking about the supremacy where all laws made in pursuance of the Constitution, in other words, all laws that were made in full compliance to the enumerated powers within the Constitution, and treaties made or the treaties that shall be made under the authority, and when they say under the authority of the United States, that means that those treaties are within those enumerated powers. They can't make a treaty over the environment. This environmental treaty that they're creating, they have no enumerated power, you know, the Paris Accord or any of this crap. If it is, it's just the same thing with Agenda 21 and the laws that are taking away your water rights and your soil rights and all of these things. They have no enumerated power to do these things. They're violating, and it is so bad, my friends, that people don't even recognize the federal tyranny. They just believe that we live in a land where the federal government has general powers to do anything that they want, and they don't. I know there's a lot of good shows out there, and I know there's a lot of really smart people out there, but it irks me to know that there are so many people that are listening to this mindless, pithy, witty, conservative comments, the great sound bites. I mean, they create all of these awesome perspectives of, you know, looking at this and looking at that. I mean, Thomas Sowell is a brilliant man, but he's not brilliant enough either to see the forest through the trees to actually recognize the solution. Now, I've never had the conversation, but most people that are so smart, you know, they look at all of, I'm just noise. I am just noise to the Candace Owens, Thomas Sowells, and all of these other, you know, Charlie Kirk, the up and rising, you know, smart guy that can make really good analysis and comments. Same thing with Gorka, all of these people. And we already know the long-term leaders in the pack, like Levin, Beck, and so forth. If these people are so smart, how come they can't see the forest through the trees? How come they can't see how Republic Review is absolutely the solution? Well, I'm going to tell you. They are so caught up in their own paradigm and in their own perspective that they're not willing to look at the forest, or they're not willing to actually look at the macro view of the trees and the forest to see how all of this would work. They don't care. And as a matter of fact, if you prove to them that this would work, they still wouldn't care. And we'll get into that when we come back. Here we go with a couple of promos, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me put a little perspective on this for you. And so one of the things that people are talking about is this border, you know, this what's going on is a border crisis. And actually, okay, but the truth of it is it's an invasion. I want you to really start looking at how all of these things are playing out. It's not just a border issue. It is the taking away of our liberties. It's the exertion of unconstitutional powers. What we are dealing with is actually a catastrophe. I mean, I can't put it in any better word. Maybe you can. But this is a catastrophe because all of these things combined is really, this is why so many people are confused. They, you know, and they're so caught up in this one little facet of this catastrophe, like the immigration or like the reckless spending or the creation of the Department of Babysitting with what Biden is trying to do. Biden is trying to invest money for the federal government to take and seize control of preschool children. Go read Hillary's book, It Takes a Village. So forgive me for this long monologue and not getting into the ratification debates, but I have to articulate this, and I want to be very clear. We are looking at a catastrophe, you know, just like what, you know, a national emergency catastrophe, just like a hurricane. Now, when a hurricane comes along, you got time. You see it forming. You see it coming across. I mean, hurricanes just don't like that hit you. I mean, you got time to evacuate and clear out of the area so that we can save lives. We may not be able to save much property. The small little property you can carry, your computer, data, you know, files, family heirlooms, those types of things, you might actually be able to, you know, seal up and protect those things because you see it coming. You can't. You cannot protect your life and your property with an earthquake. I want you to understand, we have been watching this hurricane form. We have been watching all of this devastation occur, and we have done nothing. And when I say we, I'm just talking about the American people. I've been doing everything I can since I first published my first book in 2013. Now, I do need to say thank you for those who've purchased my book. If you want to support what I am doing to help offset some of my travel expenses, buy my book. You know, you may not be a reader, but if you bought my book, and I will sign it, but if you bought it, then you're helping. It's because I do get asked every once in a while, hey, how can I help you? I mean, I really believe in what you're doing. Buy the book. Anyway, and I will stand today that is still probably one of the most relevant books written for our time, because when you look at my book, it really doesn't talk much about Republic Review. The second book talks really more about strategies and how we can start working together. And both of those books were written when I had this pie in the sky thinking the John Birch Society was a good group of people. I should say the leaders of it were good people, that they would be willing to unite. I was so naive in thinking that all these patriotic organizations would see the light and unite on saving the Constitution. That's how naive I was. And so I was even naive enough to think that we could actually do this with a majority of the states to where we could get 2/3 to first join and bring the rest of the states along. But we're so divided. The reality is... And I probably do need to get back to, you know, actually writing and finishing, because I've written the bulk of the third book, which is Reclaiming the Republic, which basically has been, it's perfected the process of Republic Review. I kind of talk at a high level in the first book, and in the second book, it's really about the strategy, because I realized, as I said, we got to do this. Well, how do we do this? And in a general sense. So the first two books were about in general sense. The second book is about very specific sense in Reclaiming the Republic. But anyway, we're dealing with a catastrophe. And so I want you to understand this is a man-made catastrophe that has been happening for a century. The communist revolution, the communist infiltration into America occurred in the 1800s, the very end of the 1800s. And we can engage and stop it. We could have stopped it a long time ago. One of the problems and one of the things we needed, that the Lord needed to bless us with the internet, even though 80%, if not 90% of the internet is basically a cesspool of evil, the pornography and all the rest of the crap that's on it. But the Lord gave us the internet so that we could have access to data. Excuse me. This is so important. I'm not editing this stuff. What you have to know is we have the time to get engaged. We need all hands on deck, and we need to step in stopping this catastrophe. We can actually stop this without having to react at the very last minute when the federal government says, okay, this is what we're going to do. We are going to actually close down this, you know, this usurpation by the federal government. In addition to the usurpation by the states, we can do this. We can actually, so I'm targeting leaders. That's where we need to focus. The people that are leading organizations, we need to start creating a list of all of the organizations out there that don't care. They will not unite with all other organizations. See, we can't get the states to come together until we convince enough of the leaders that they need to do this. So my major focus is trying to reach out to these patriot organizations, the leadership, which I did with the John Birch Society a long time ago. And they deliberately said, we're not going to even make comment because we don't care. We're too busy doing our own thing. And then behind my back, they've gone around and started sending emails. Hey, we think that this guy's kind of shady. He wants to have a convention of states. What? Anywho, they're not the only organization. There are other organizations, and I need to definitize in reaching out to these organizations so that they come out outright and say, we cannot unify with a large group of organizations in saving the Constitution. We can't do it. And then you need to know who those organizations are. Because why would you be involved with an organization that is resistant to saving the Constitution and working with everybody else? Why? Why would you be a member? Why would you even listen to them? And so we're going to start naming names because we need to. We'll have a page of the Decepticons, if you want to put it into that context. I haven't even seen those movies, but I do understand. Anyway, we have an opportunity, and I dread the day that we have to respond to the federal government's action saying we are going to set aside the Constitution. Because, you know, I'm out asking right now. I'm asking state legislatures. I've asked 14 states. 13, maybe it's 13, regardless, over 10 states, I have asked them, what does it take to have an emergency session? Why is it that you have not started the discussion of having an emergency session with all of the crap that's going on? The grasping for our Second Amendment rights, our right of speech, seizing the control of our elections, they are looking to take full control and power so that they cannot be attested and that the communist revolution moves forward, that America is thrown in, and we discard the Constitution, is thrown into a state of global communism. Are you kidding? You know, the funny thing is, there's all these conservative entertainers that are talking about it. They see it happening, and they don't understand that there's actually a solution. Maybe your responsibility or maybe your contribution is calling these people so that we can get them to choose. We have to start separating the wheat from the chaff, if you understand the biblical sense of that, so that we can understand who are the true friends of Christ or Christianity and liberty. Because when I started this off on March 29th, I told you about the scale of liberty. I told you that on the extreme side of liberty, it means that everybody must choose for themselves. And whatever their choices are, they must live with the consequences. In a land of liberty, it doesn't matter if you choose to be homosexual, but you must live with the consequences of that. You can't have kids. You can't have the normal family. You have chosen a lifestyle that has removed those opportunities from you. And you've chosen a lifestyle that removes you from other things as well. And it's the same thing with drinking, smoking. Yeah, sure, if you want to destroy your body, then okay. But insurance can't be compelled to cover those things that you have done to yourself. I mean, evil is the act of trying to remove the consequences of sin. The consequences of bad behavior. Behavior that we all have empirical data to state that this will be the consequence of this. Infidelity. All of these things. Pornography. Everything that we have in our society and in our life today, we have empirical data that tells us whether that's good behavior or not. And an enlightened society turns its back on bad behavior and chooses to live towards the betterment of society and tries to improve enlightenment and society, not by compulsion, not by force, but by choice and liberty. We'll be right back after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Friends, a good friend of mine, Trevor Lawden, who is a New Zealander, actually has stepped in, and he completely supports Republic Review. He understands what Republic Review will do, and he is an anti-conventionite. In other words, he does not support an Article 5 convention. And as a matter of fact, I challenge anybody to read the process on reclaimingtherepublic.org. You will find, because I've added this little anecdotal piece of information, or actually when you look at, because I think anybody would come to this. And here's the interesting thing. All of these organizations that are fighting the convention of states, why is it that they're not trying to work on building a consensus amongst the state legislators to actually state legislatures as well as Congress in getting them to remove that from the Constitution? Because they really think that it needs to stay in there. If you understand Republic Review and the power that the states actually have over that Constitution, because the framers really didn't understand this. Contract law was not that mature. But when you go through the nullification, and actually, to be clear, Madison was never considered nullification as a correct or appropriate action unless there was a problem with the Constitution, because he considered, and the act of nullification means that there is a problem with the law itself, not unconstitutional laws or violations of the Constitution, that there's a problem with the Constitution. So the only time that nullification has been truly appropriate was when Wisconsin actually nullified slavery or the returning of slaves, because they were pointing to the Constitution being the problem. And they were correct. But Madison also points out that states that actually have that epiphany and recognize the problems within the Constitution, they have an obligation of going down two directions. One is to secede from the Union and actually remove themselves. And those are Madison's words. Actually, even Jefferson made those comments. And if you read Madison's notes on nullification of 1834, he actually cites Jefferson in saying that the states should secede. If they have a problem with the Constitution, why? Why do that? And, you know, I told you I was going to get into this actually later, because the focus here is the ratification debates. But the fact of the matter is that when Jefferson made these comments of seceding, it's because there's this thing in the Constitution called the Uniformity Clause, and all states must uniformly support the Constitution. If you can't, because there's a problem, then you must secede, or you must become an ardent champion with changing the Constitution. And sometimes you have to do both, because if you can't build consensus, and when Wisconsin and a few other states started actually not abiding by the returning of the slaves, then at that point in time, they should have seceded because enough states were getting on board. That would have possibly brought the South to, you know, complying to the Declaration of Independence and the principles that were embedded in that all men were created equal. We might have been able to avoid the Civil War. But George Mason in the Constitutional Convention, he actually predicted it. He said that the evil of slavery will cause that, and I'm paraphrasing. But anyway, back to the ratification debates, because that's what the focus is right now. We'll get into nullification and interposition once we're through with this, and once we actually historically go through the Assumption Acts and a few, you know, the cod fishery bounties and some of these other things, we'll actually get to, because it's kind of early in the history of Madison and Jefferson's attempt to try to interpose, not nullify, interpose on the federal government, getting the states to basically collectively work together enforcing the federal government. The one problem that they had was they did not have the 14th Amendment. And so only the Lord knew what we would need to actually force compliance and getting rid of those bad actors in government. And that's where the 14th Amendment came in. And the Lord made sure that we got Section 3 of the 14th Amendment into our constitutional framework, so that in these days, when we have become such a corrupt political operative machine that has been driving us off this precipice, we can actually use the Constitution to pull us back and to save ourselves. Anyway, all that being said, we were talking about supremacy. Mr. Iredell was basically laying this out, and we created this debate, and we went from Mr. Iredell's comments to Mr. Bloodworth, Mr. Iredell, Mr. Bloodworth, Mr. McLean, and now Mr. Davey pipes in. And so everybody's kind of arguing about the importance of allowing the federal government to have supremacy over all things that are within the enumerated powers of the federal government. And this is what Mr. Davey says. Mr. Chairman, permit me to, sir, to make a few observations on the operation of the clause so often mentioned. This Constitution, as to the powers therein granted, is constantly to be the supreme law of the land. Every power ceded by it must be executed without being counteracted by the laws or constitutions of the individual states. Gentlemen should distinguish that it is not the supreme law in the exercise of a power not granted. It can be supreme only in cases consistent with the powers specially granted, and not in usurpations. If you grant any power to the federal government, the laws made in pursuance of that power must be supreme and controlled in their operation. This consequence is involved in the very nature and necessity of the thing. The only rational inquiry is whether those powers are necessary and whether they are properly granted. To say that you have vested the federal government with power to legislate for the union and then deny the supremacy of the laws is a socialism, and when I say socialism, it is S-O-L-E-C-I-S-M, not socialism. Socialism in terms, I probably mispronounced that, with respect to its operation in our own paper money. I believe that a little consideration will satisfy every man that it cannot have the effect asserted by the gentleman from Hanover, Mr. Bloodworth. The Federal Convention knew that several states had large sums of paper money in circulation, and like Rhode Island, and that it was interesting property, and that they were sensible that those states would never consent to its immediate destruction or ratify any system that would have that operation. The mischief already done could not be repaired. All that could be done was to form some limitation to this great political evil, as the paper money had become private property and the object of numberless contracts. It could not be destroyed or intermingled within the situation, although its baneful tendency was obvious and undeniable. It was, however, effecting an important object to put bounds to this growing mischief. If the states had compelled to sink the paper money instantly, the remedy might be worse than the disease. As they could not put an immediate end to it, we were content with prohibiting, because obviously he was a part of the delegates at the ratification debates, we were content with prohibiting its future increase, looking forward to its entire extinguishment when the states that had emission circulation should be able to carry to call it in by a gradual redemption. Now, I want to be clear here. He just pointed out something. He talked about money being property, and when we have physical money, it is property. When they move us to a cryptocurrency or a cashless, non-money society, that it's all electronic, and they're getting us there, and the federal government will do that. That will be a direct violation of the Constitution, and you have to understand that you will no longer have any property in your money. You'll be allowed to have an account where you can keep money, but it can be taken from you like that, just so you know. In Pennsylvania, he goes on and says, in Pennsylvania, their paper money was not tender in discharge of private contracts. In South Carolina, their bills became eventually a tender, and in Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey, and North Carolina, the paper money was made a legal tender in all cases whatsoever. See, this is so awesome about the ratification base, because it gives you a good snapshot at this point in time of where all these states were, what they were doing financially even. The other states were sensible that the destruction of the circulating paper would be a violation of the rights of private property, and that such a measure would render the accession of those states to the system absolutely impracticable. You got to remember that even before this, before they even had paper money, they had what they call cash crops. In other words, your tobacco was the cash crop in America. It was just like the tulip was the cash crop of Holland a long, long, long time ago. And so that's how they did bartering and trading. And the reason tobacco was the cash crop was because it was mandated by Britain, and basically Britain was the one that instituted that. But they couldn't grow tobacco up in Massachusetts. So Massachusetts and the independent states and colonies didn't have a unified monetary system, but many of the colonies did have cash crops. But anyhow, we're going into another break, and we will finish Mr. Davies' comments when we come back. So we'll be right back, and I think we'll be able to get into Ex Post Facto. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so kind of repeat that last sentence. The other states were sensible that the destruction of the circulating paper would be a violation of the rights of property, and that such a measure would render the accession of those states to the system absolutely impracticable. The injustice and pernicious tendency of this disgraceful policy were viewed with great indignation by the states which adhered to the principles of injustice. In Rogue Island, or Rhode Island, the paper money had depreciated to 8-for-1. And what's going on in America today with Biden, Trump, and all of these presidents that have been pumping out money with quantitative easing and all of these bailouts and crap? It's incredible. As we see, 400% in building materials in just 1 year has increased. That is inflation. Anyway, and just to be clear, inflation isn't necessarily the rising cost of things. It is a byproduct of the increased amount of money in circulation. Okay. So Rhode Island, the paper money had depreciated to 8-for-1. And so we're at 400-to-1 in just 1 year. At 4-to-1, I should say. And a 100% increase. With us, the people of Massachusetts and Connecticut have been great sufferers by the dishonesty of Rhode Island. And similar complaints existed against this state. This clause became, in some measure, a preliminary with the gentleman who represented the other states. Now, you do realize that Rhode Island, or Rogue Island, even though they were hurting themselves, they were taking advantage of other states. You have, and this is how Germany kind of solved their problem of World War I and their debt. They were just able to continually print and pay it off, where the states really didn't get the money that they were expecting, and that kind of pissed off the world as well as the Germans. Anyway, quote, you have, close quote, said they, quote, by your iniquitous laws and paper missions, shamefully defrauded our citizens. The Confederation prevented or compelling you to do them justice. But before we confederate with you again, you must not only agree to be honest, but put it in your power to be otherwise. Sir, a member of the Rhode Island itself could have not set his face against such language. The clause was, I believe, unanimously assented to, and it was only a future aspect and can by no means have retrospective operation. And I trust the principles upon the convention proceeded will meet the approbation of every honest man. Now, I was starting to think about while I was trying to read that last sentence. I do not believe, and there was really no commentary that I have ever found, but I do not believe that the framers at the convention expected or even wanted to see Rhode Island join the Union. I think they actually wanted to see Rhode Island dissolved and probably be picked up by another state just because of all of the problems. And I tell you, look today. I mean, Rhode Island has been a problematic state. Anyway, that being what it is, let's get into Mr. Iredell's talking about ex post facto laws and so forth. Mr. Chairman, with respect to where is the ex post facto clauses? Okay, it's Article 1, Section 8, Article 1, Section 9, and Article 1, Section 10. Section 9 prohibits the federal government from creating ex post facto laws. So in other words, something that was legal cannot become illegal. So that if it was legal by the Constitution and then you amend it and make it illegal, well, okay, you can do that, but you can't punish people. So from that point on, you can kind of change things. So that's why the abolition of slavery was a shift. They didn't go and arrest all of the slave masters and say you violated the law, federal law, or what have you. What they can't do is they can't do that. They can't come and punish you for a change in the law. And it's the same thing with reparations. At that point in time, slavery was legal. And so reparations would be considered an ex post facto application to say, okay, all you slave masters, all you slave states, you have to pay for this. And so anyway, Mr. Iredell goes down this path of saying, Mr. Chairman, with respect to this clause, it cannot have the operation contended for. There is nothing in the Constitution which affects, and obviously I have not provided you the contention by the anti-federalist about this. I just want to focus on what he has to say. In the Constitution, which affects our present paper money, it prohibits the future the emitting of any, but it does not interfere with the paper money now actually in circulation in several states. This is an express clause which protects it. It provides that there shall be no ex post facto law. This would be an ex post facto if the construction contended for were right, as has been observed by another gentleman. If a suit were brought against a man in the federal court and execution should go against his property, I apprehend he would, under this Constitution, have a right to pay our paper money, there being nothing in the Constitution taking away the validity of it. Every individual in the United States will keep his eye watchful over those who administer the general government, and no usurpation of power will be acquiesced in. The possibility of usurping powers ought not to be objected against. Abuse may happen in any government. The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise. Now, I want to add something here, that the people in stopping the exercise of usurpations, the people have to focus not on the federal government, but they have to say, okay, look, the federal government is doing this, state, you need to step in. And this is where we'll get into interposition nullification with the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions of 1798. This is the case in all free governments in the world. The people will resist if the government usurps powers not delegated to it. We must run the risk of abuse. We must take care to give no more power than is necessary. But Having given that, we must submit to the possible dangers arising from it. And the argument was in every single state in the union when they talked about, hey, you guys are giving these guys power. You know, they can become so big that they start usurping our power. Okay, well, that's a reality of abuse that would happen in any time you've given some kind of power, like the ability to have arms or just to have an army, you know, for whatever purpose. And then all of a sudden, you know, they start using that army to doing tyrannical things that are all illegal and all unconstitutional. The whole premise of these usurpations and violations of our rights and unconstitutional powers all is built upon violations of the Constitution. In other words, when the government decides to become unconstitutional, then we have a problem. But if they are functioning within the framework of the Constitution, then everything works fine. So how do we make sure that they stay within the framework? That is the state legislature's job. That's why we will get into the interposition and nullification so that you understand how republic review is that process. We don't need to have some things in the Constitution, such as the convention for the states for amending the Constitution. Now, I've got 2 minutes. Let me see if I can get this last paragraph in on ex post facto laws. With respect to the great weight of the northern states, it will not, on a candid examination, appear so great as the gentleman supposes. At present, the regulation of our representation is merely temporary. Whether greater or less, it will hereafter depend on actual population. The extent of the state is very great, almost equal to that of any state in the Union, and our population will probably be in proportion. To the north of Pennsylvania, there are 27 votes. To the south of Pennsylvania, there are 30 votes. Why is he saying this? Because Pennsylvania happens to be that kind of imaginary line of the abolitionist states, and the southern part are the slave states, leaving Pennsylvania out. Pennsylvania has 8 votes. In the division of what is called the northern and southern interest, Pennsylvania will not appear to be decidedly in either scale. Though there may be a combination of the northern states, it is not certain that the interest of Pennsylvania will coincide with theirs. If at any time she join us, we shall have 38 states against 27. Should she be against us, they will only have 35 to 30. There are 2 states in the northward who have, in some respect, a similarity of interest with ours. What is the situation of New Jersey? It is, in one respect, similar to ours. Most of the goods they use come through New York, and they pay for the benefit of New York as we pay for that of Virginia. It is so with Connecticut, so that in every question between importing and non-importing states, we may have that of the 2 northern states would probably join with North Carolina. It is impossible to destroy altogether the idea of separate interest, but the difference between the states does not appear to me so great as the gentleman imagines, and I beg leave to say that in proportion to the increase of population, the southern states will have a greater weight than the northern, as they have such large quantities of land still uncultivated, which is not as much in the case of the North. We should suffer a small temporary inconvenience. We shall be compensated for it by having the weight of the population in favor, in our favor in future. And so that ends his comments that I will caught. But let me add this. I don't think Mr. Iredell, who was making this comment, understood the fact that as new states in the North, like Ohio, Iowa, Kentucky, Virginia, or Kentucky, Tennessee, and so forth, many of these states were actually moving away from being slave states, and their separate interests became such a peril that they had to do the Missouri Compromise. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.